This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Acutely food insecure households are at risk having to resort to negative coping strategies such as skipping meals, smaller food portions, and adults not eating so that young children can eat.
That was Paul Turnbull, the World Food Programme Country Director in Malawi, on the country's growing hunger problem. Details coming up. Also, Senegal swore in Bassirou Diomaye Faye as its new president today. And Egypt's president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, took the oath of office for his third six-year term. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Senegal swore in Bassirou Diomaye Faye as its new president today, completing the previously little-known opposition figure's dramatic ascent from prison to the palace in a matter of weeks. Mariama Diallo, VOA's Nairobi bureau chief, is in Dakar monitoring the situation. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mariama.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Yehia. It's a very exciting time in Senegal at the moment.
So Faye was released from prison less than 2 weeks ago before the March 24 election. Today, he has been sworn in as the youngest president of Senegal. Talk to us about this meteoric ascension.
It's absolutely amazing. As a lot of people have said, you just never know what can happen. I don't know if he dreamed that maybe about 2 weeks ago that he would be the youngest and the fifth president of Senegal because he was in prison. They had a very short time to campaign when him and Ousmane Sonko was released because of an amnesty law that was passed at basically the last minute. But it happened. The elections took place, and he was sworn in today at the International Conference Center Abdou Diouf, which is actually named after the country's second president. It's located in Jamnyadjo, which is about an hour from Dakar city center. He took the oath of office. I can just paraphrase what he said, saying that that before God and the Senegalese nation, he will fulfill the office of President of the Republic of Senegal faithfully, that he will thoroughly observe and ensure the observance of the provisions of the constitutions and the laws.
So, Mariama, presidents from across West Africa and representatives from the U.S. and Europe, we are told, were in attendance today at the ceremony. Who was there?
Well, a lot of people. As you said, at least on the Africa side, it looks like a lot of the neighbors, many of them came. If they couldn't send heads of state, they sent in prime minister or basically presidents of the national assemblies. For presidents, we could observe that Sierra Leone was here, the two Guineas, Guinea-Bissau and Guinea-Conakry, they were here. The Nigerian president, Mr. Tinubu, was also here, Ghana. So there were definitely a lot of people, and even representatives of the African Union. Moussa Faki, the African Union Commission representative, who was here. So definitely, it was absolutely well attended by so many. I mean, when you think about even neighboring countries like Mali, I think the president couldn't be here, but the foreign minister was here, and I think either the National Assembly or some other high level official attended. So very well attended by many in Africa and around the world.
And opposition figure Ousmane Sonko named Faye to run in his place after being barred from the election for a prior conviction. So I'm just curious, Mariama, is Sonko expected to have a prominent role in the new Faye administration?
I think that is the million-dollar question, but that is also in the mind of everybody. That is an excellent question because, as you said, the two of them have been like two peas in a pod. I mean, they are always together. If they're not together, when they were campaigning with that short time, they had decided to campaign on each side so they can reach as many people as possible. But yes, I mean, a lot of people are saying that Diomaye Faye has been elected because of Sonko, because it's Sonko who picked him because he couldn't run in these elections. Today he was in attendance, and I have to tell you, every time his image came on the screen, on some of the big screens, I mean, people were just going absolutely crazy. They were applauding every time they showed him. So, yeah, I'm sure, I don't know what the cabinet is going to be like, the composition of this new cabinet, but it should be expected that, you know, that Sonko, who is basically that the person who was supposed to be the key challenger to the outgoing president Macky Sall, is the reason why Mr. President Bassirou Diomaye Faye, has been elected and is going to lead this country the next 5 years.
Mariama Diallo, VOA's Nairobi bureau chief. Thank you for your input.
Yahya, thank you for having me.
April 2nd is World Autism Awareness Day. Autism spectrum disorder is a developmental disorder characterized by challenges with social skills, repetitive behaviors, and speech and nonverbal communication. About 1 in 100 children has autism worldwide, according to the World Health Organization. Observers say autism cases are in the rise, with more children diagnosed every day and accessing treatment. However, much remains to be done to enable children in some communities to access the needed treatment and care. For more insight, VOA's Leonard Mudu spoke with Virginia Kasiyama, founder of JECC Behavioral Center in the U.S. state of Massachusetts. We'll have an excerpt of the interview tomorrow on Africa News Tonight. Zimbabwe is expected to launch yet another currency this week to replace the one that the African Development Bank calls one of the worst performing currencies in the world. The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe says the new structured currency will be backed by gold and U.S. dollars and will address currency volatility and exchange rate-driven inflation. Harare maintains annual inflation stands at 55.3%, while Johns Hopkins University professor Steve Haneke, who specializes in hyperinflation and was an advisor to President Ronald Reagan, puts it at 1,521%, the highest in the world. South African-based economist Dr. Idi Mahimba of Underhill Corporate Solution tells VOA's Zimbabwe Service reporter Blessing Zulu, the new currency is doomed to fail without political and economic reforms.
I think, in my view, the chances of success are just based on history. We have had the bond note. The chances of success were not good. We have had bearer checks, the same thing. So I'm sure this one is also being launched amid the same scenario. So the success is most likely going to be nil. But however, we also have to give the Reserve Bank the benefit of doubt.
If you may elaborate.
Because they are saying that it's being backed by gold, but also it's being backed by the reserve currency, which is your US dollar. But however, it's difficult for somebody to say it's going to succeed without knowing truly, surely, that money is there. But most importantly, if we also look at history as well, we are also told that the current bond note, which is being replaced, we were told that it was also backed by the Exim Bank facility. And that facility, we don't even know how it went, how far it is. If we paid back that loan.
Is this the right time to be launching a new currency? All the fundamentals in place?
One of the key issues about the currency has always been having some economic fundamentals like your import cover and production capacity and so forth. So those issues are not in place. So therefore, the success of this currency is also questionable because of that.
An advisor to the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe's Governor Persistence Gwanyanya counters that economists must not cause unnecessary panic.
There is no need to panic. Neither is there need to cause alarm and despondence.
Why must Zimbabweans not panic? Because this has happened before, and many lost their savings.
The policymakers have taken time. They've taken time to model the monetary policy, to consult and to come up with something that we expect to deliver. So there is no need for people to panic. In actual fact, it is only advisable for the market to calm down and not to take rash decisions.
Why are you cautioning the market to remain calm?
To avoid loss, unnecessary losses. At this point in time, it is only reasonable and logical for one to anticipate some measure of stability of the Zimbabwean dollar after the implementation of the intervention, the much-weighted intervention. So there is virtually, literally, no reason for the market to panic. In actual fact, I am very hopeful. I am very optimistic about what lies ahead.
That was a Persistence Guanyan, advisor to the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe governor, speaking with VOA's reporter Blessing Zulu. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America, and for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The World Food Program warns that Malawi faces a looming food crisis due to a devastating drought triggered by the effects of El Niño, and urgently needs global support to cope with the climate disaster. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN's World Food Programme reports around 40% of Malawi's population of more than 20 million is facing acute hunger, threatening both lives and livelihoods. The agency says the country is still reeling from the impacts of tropical storms and cyclones that struck Malawi with terrible force in 2022 and 2023. As a result of these multiple disasters, it says 80% of the population that relies on agriculture is unable to cover its basic needs. WFP Country Director and Representative in Malawi, Paul Turnbull, says national maize stocks are running extremely low, forcing the country to import staple commodities that are normally available at home. Speaking from the capital, Lilongwe, today, he says food prices have soared to alarming levels, making them unaffordable for most people.
Acutely food insecure households are at risk, having to resort to negative coping strategies, such as skipping meals, smaller food portions, and adults not eating so that young children can eat. There has been a surge in cases of children with moderate acute malnutrition and severe acute malnutrition, which is expected to become worse this year.
He says the strain on families also is increasing protection issues, particularly of women and girls. On March 23rd, Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera declared a state of disaster in 23 out of Malawi's 28 districts affected by El Niño conditions. The government's preliminary estimates are that close to 2 million farming households and 749,000 hectares have been affected. This represents 44% of the national crop area. Turnbull says the impact of the El Niño-triggered drought is huge, and so are the needs. He says a hunger catastrophe can be averted if the international community steps up now with urgently needed aid, but he warns time for saving lives is running out.
The early onset of the 2024-2025 lean season poses significant challenges. Normally, the lean season starts in October. This year, it could start as early as July. Worst affected districts.
President Chakwera has appealed for more than $200 million to purchase 600,000 metric tons of food needed to feed his country of 20 million. For its part, Turnbull says WFP requires $70 million to provide emergency food assistance to some 2 million people for 3 months. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi was sworn in before parliament today for his third term. It's set to be the 69-year-old's last six-year stint unless he again tries to prolong his tenure through a constitutional amendment. Sisi outlined his national priorities. Angie Omar reports from Cairo.
Sisi delivered a speech after taking the oath at Parliament's new headquarters, thanking the populace for entrusting him with another term, which starts tomorrow. He outlined his objectives encompassing politics, foreign affairs, economic reforms, social protection, and urban development. He pledged to continue strengthening relations with all nations to allow Egypt to promote global peace, security, and development.
I reaffirm my commitment to continuing the journey of nation building and fulfilling the aspirations of the esteemed Egyptian people in building a modern democratic state that excels in science, industry, urban development, agriculture, literature, and the arts.
But Sisi's critics argue that in his first two terms, Egypt moved deeper into authoritarianism than former President Hosni Mubarak, who was ousted by a popular uprising in 2011 after ruling for 3 decades under a state of emergency. Rights groups say Sisi has muzzled political opponents, activists, and media, while security forces have carried out arbitrary detentions and torture with impunity. Said Sadek is a professor of political sociology at Japan's Egypt University. He says Sisi's legacy so far is a mix of good and bad.
He had many challenges, legitimacy, fighting with big countries like Turkey and Qatari media, Al Jazeera. The Egypt borders were on fire, Libya, Sudan, Gaza. He was able to defeat terrorism in North Sinai. He built a lot of infrastructure, but at the same time, he had some problems economically. I mean, the weakest point in his rule has been the economy. The Egyptian pound lost a lot of its value, more poverty.
Sisi also vowed to deepen national dialogue and implement its recommendations to foster political and democratic participation, especially among the youth. El-Sisi emphasized his commitment to adopting strategies that maximize Egypt's economic resources and capabilities. Moreover, he stated that the state would embark on comprehensive institutional reforms to ensure financial discipline and achieve effective governance. Sadek stresses that the economy and political reform are the real tests for Sisi's third term.
If Sisi is going to make stability sustainable in Egypt, he has to play with economy. He has to, do more things that are not what he did in the last 3 years. More on health, on education, on industrialization, on agricultural development, which he is doing. I mean, he did something about agriculture. You go to Toshka in Upper Egypt, a lot of wheat production that is happening. But he needs to focus more on the economic situation, because if he doesn't focus on the economic situation, you will have more instability in Egypt, because economic instability would lead to political instability, insecurity instability would lead to illegal migration, terrorism would lead to a lot of disasters.
After winning the December election with 89.6% of the vote against 3 relative unknowns, Sisi's new term runs until 2030. The oath also marked the inauguration of Egypt's new administrative capital, located in the desert east of Cairo, local media reported. For the past 2 years, his administration has struggled to contain the fallout of a punishing economic crisis that has seen the currency lose 2/3 of its value and inflation soar to a record 40% last year. In the first quarter of 2024, however, Egypt saw an influx of over $50 billion in loans and investment deals, which Cairo has said will ease the foreign currency shortages and revitalize the economy. For VOA, this is Angie Omar from Cairo.
The U.S. has been without an embassy in Libya since its personnel withdrew under heavy military escort in 2014, and American diplomats relocated to Malta and later to Niger. The U.S. now wants to establish a temporary diplomatic facility in Libya, citing a range of fundamental interests that warrant a restored U.S. presence. Chief among the reasons for a U.S. return is Russia's expanding foothold on NATO's southern flank. Wolfgang Porchtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi.
Since after the murder of Ambassador Christopher Stevens and three other Americans in Benghazi on September 11, 2012, Washington is extremely careful about having diplomatic personnel on the ground. And since after the withdrawal of the embassy, as you said, to Tunisia on July 26, 2014, State Department has been even more cautious in order not to risk the life of an American diplomat in Libya, a country with a relatively low priority for the United States. And in the meantime, I would say there is no doubt that U.S. diplomats are more at risk in Libya than, for example, their colleagues from Germany or even Italy, keeping especially developments in the Middle East in mind. However, as there were no attacks on any foreign diplomats in Libya since years, and fighting in Tripoli is usually on a very local level, the Americans are now ready to take the risk. This announcement is now, I would say, a remarkable shift in the U.S. diplomatic approach towards Libya. And while a temporary diplomatic facility is certainly far from a full-fledged embassy, it will allow the United States to maintain a permanent diplomatic representation in Tripoli.
The U.S. State Department cites a range of fundamental interests that warrant a restored U.S. diplomatic presence in Libya, including supporting the United Nations push for elections, promoting U.S. trade and investment opportunities, and preventing Libya from becoming enmeshed in rising stability across the Sahel region. Yet, chief among the reasons for a U.S. return is Russia's expanding foothold on NATO's southern flank. How crucial to these U.S. interests is to have an embassy in Tripoli?
Yes, the role of Russia in Libya is of utmost concern to the United States. And this is certainly not so much about trade and investment, and also not so much about the push for election. The United States did not come forward with an own initiative since years, but about Russia. And Russia has a permanent diplomatic representation in Tripoli since August last year and has officially opened its embassy on February 23. Furthermore, it intends to open a consulate in Benghazi soon. The Russian ambassador, Aidar Aganin, and his staff are highly active. They are having almost on a daily basis meetings with senior Libyans in the west and in the east of Libya. On the other side, U.S. travel diplomacy is focusing more or less only around the ambassador himself or the charge d'affaires right now, and it does not allow a comparable density of diplomatic contacts. Therefore, they have decided now to change this.
Former U.S. ambassador and UN envoy to Libya, Stephanie Williams, said that Libya had never been high on the priority list for Washington, but you have to start somewhere, and the best place to start is with an embassy on the ground. What do you make of that statement?
Well, of course, it depends also on the risk that you're willing to take into account. But it is correct that the U.S. has no vital interests directly connected with Libya, and everything is derived from this one. But there are a couple of important interests, especially in relation to counterterrorism, where Libya's instability still harms its neighbors. And even more important right now, with the expansion of Russian mercenary operations throughout Africa, Libya became a new significant partner for Moscow as a logistic hub and a staging area for these mercenaries, much to the dismay of Washington. But Washington has very limited influence in Tripoli and in Benghazi. The economic instrument of state power, which is usually a preferred tool for the United States, has only a secondary role in containing Russia in Libya, as Libya is under U.S. sanctions anyway. And as Libya has a relatively low priority for the United States, this justifies only a very limited use of the military instrument of state power. Therefore, the preferred American instrument on hand to counter Russia's use of of Libya for its own purposes is in particular diplomacy. And to optimize its use throughout the permanent presence on the ground makes absolutely sense.
That was Wolfgang Porstai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhaib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.